Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I still can't get enough of the March for Freedom. The March for the Taste of Freedom today there in the Capitol. And, you know, as I keep watching the video over and over again, and I have no idea why anyone in the Republican Party would follow Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene anywhere. Honestly, I don't get it. Be crazy, you know, do your thing, but they are, well, I think they're both going to lose in the next election. But they're crazy. They're really off the edge. But I guess they're raising a lot of money, so it's like anything, it's the money that talks. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the big Freedom March. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us, share some of her fabulous work over at Raw Story. If you haven't seen her, rawstory.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media how you can follow Sarah. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
It's a boot freedom.
It's a boot freedom. What are you, Canadian now?
I don't know. For some reason, whenever I try and do a Scottish accent, I have to say a boot.
You might as well, because the rest of it was a clown show anyway. So this fits right with what the geniuses there in our House of Representatives pulled off today.
I mean, really, it's kind of this bigger metaphor of the entire Republican Party following the biggest idiots in their party off a cliff. It makes total sense. And it's this massive metaphor. I was thinking though today about how, if John Boehner was still there, they'd be gone. he would have found some prostitute to, like, you know, entrap them or something. And he would get rid of them.
But dude, you've got Matt Gaetz, who there are credible reports being reported that he's had sex with a minor in Florida, and yet he's still lead, not just there, but leading the pack of crazy. He's the head of the 4G. Him, Green, Gohmert, and Gossert, evidently they showed up at a detention facility today demanding access. What the freak is that?
I thought that was the brilliant idea. I thought they should have let him in and then not let him out.
And then kept him, like Roach Motel. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's like Hotel California. You can come, but you can't leave. Gohmert tried to pull this whole, I have some kind of secret clearance or something, so you got to let me in. And it's like, no, you don't. Nobody would ever trust you with any kind of security clearance. The only kind of security clearance you have is that you can go through security.
Your wife doesn't even let you know where the cookie jar is. What are you talking about?
Yeah, for real.
But this is this weird kind of entitlement that they have, that they think that now that, and I guess this shows that they don't really know their job or what their job is, that they think they can just walk in anywhere and everyone has to bow down.
And what's interesting is this is something that they try and fundraise off of. And I think a lot of crazy supporters of theirs actually go for it and we'll give them $25.
Yep. No, you're spot on. In fact, you know, I can't tell you how many tweet responses that I saw. People going, this is illegal. This is against the law. They're breaking the law. I'm going, no, dum-dum. You don't just get to walk into a prison, no matter who you are.
And what's interesting, too, is I wondered which prison it was, because they said that they were there to see the, the insurrectionists. There, I think, at last count, I heard that there were 66 that were in prison. I don't think that they're all in the same prison.
No.
So I wondered what prison they went to. Was it like the federal prison in Alexandria? Was it like the D.C., city jail? Was it, you know, because these are federal crimes. So why would they put them in the D.C. city? A bunch of people were arrested outside of Washington. So are they being held somewhere else? There's the one guy, the horns dude, who was sent to Denver for some kind of psych evaluation. We still haven't heard what's the status there. He could have already been abducted by aliens. I don't know.
And that would be a good punishment. But we did hear from Louis Go-Go Gohmert that the people in there are being treated worse than the bloodthirsty terrorists in Guantanamo Bay.
Which is hilarious, because it's like, well, you guys are the lawmakers. If you don't like the way people are treated in prison, then maybe pass some legislation about that. Like, I feel like we've kind of been talking about criminal, you know, reform and prison reform for a pretty long time, but, you know, whatever. I just think it's hilarious.
Well, I mean, there was that. There's that old statement. If you want to, what is it? You want to turn a liberal into a conservative? You throw them in jail. You want to turn a conservative into a liberal? You throw them in jail. Jail's a bad place. Maybe you should have thought of that before you were going on your criming spree.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good indicator of some forethought there.
And you know, the people who are in there were, you know, a year ago they'd be telling you prison's supposed to be hard. They got cable TV, they got swimming pools, it's easy. And now they're whining that people don't like me, and I'm worried, I have to get soap on the rope.
I wonder, honestly, I bet we could probably find Louis Gohmert for sure. We could find some video of him railing about how prison should be a terrible place. I don't know if we could with the other ones because they haven't been in Congress for that long, but I guarantee you somewhere there is a video of Louis Gohmert railing about that.
You absolutely know there is. And it's just crazy because, you know, you listen to the tantrums of these children, and it's what they are. What happened to statesmen? What happened to people who go to Congress to do something in the public interest, to do the right thing, to move the country forward, to make this a better place? All we got is a bunch of kids trying to score points on Twitter, leading our country. And it's crazy.
Well, whenever it comes to Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, they really kind of are just crazy children. They're people whose fathers made a whole lot of money, and they basically were able to buy their way into Congress. I don't think that's necessarily the case for Gohser. I don't know how the hell he got elected, but and Gohmert is just redistricting, you know, gerrymandering the hell out of the state of Texas. So, you know, these people are, this is how we get this stuff. If you guys don't want gerrymandering, then, you know,
yeah, I get that in the House. I get the gerrymandering in the House. I got that. But how do you end up with, you know, Florida? What's with Marco Rubio? How does that guy, you know, represent the state of Florida, especially now that he's attacked the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, for wearing a face shield while in the Philippines? Hey, Dim Dim, that's the law. You have to do that.
That was one of my favorite stories today because it's kind of an indicator of Rubio just randomly sends stuff out into the ether of the world. And he doesn't necessarily think before he tweets. You know, if you're going to sort of assert something big, if you're going to attack the Secretary of Defense from a, you know, a lowly little, you know, scrawny Marco Rubio down in Florida, who's never served a day in his life, you probably should Google it first. It's just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was just like, this is all mask theater, except that everybody else, all of the military people that were standing in the line to greet him, also had masks and shield on. And then you look at the embassies for the Philippines and the State Department information that's like, it's mandated that you wear a mask and shield. And then there's all these stories about how the Philippines mandated it. And you're like, how did you just not, like, I guess he missed that day in the news.
Freedom! Or... Freedom! Freedom!
I mean, that's the thing about the Philippines is that is not a happy place. That's a really kind of hardcore dictatorial. I mean, we've talked about how Trump worships Duterte because of his authoritarianism. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where the sec def showed up without a mask and shield on, they probably would have beat him to death.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to those that time when the Republicans were, you know, when Rubio himself was probably, oh, no, they're great, we love them. And now they're making us wear masks? No, they're all cowards for not refusing to wear a mask.
I would love to see Marco Rubio go to the Philippines and tell them how it's done.
I'd pay for the ticket.
Me too.
I would. I'd pay for the first class. I would never spring for a first class ticket for myself, but for Marco to go to the Philippines, I would do that.
I feel like we could fundraise the hell out of that. We could make that happen.
we most certainly should do. Now, interesting. Funny. Another one of these funny Republican stories. John Kennedy, the Republican from Louisiana, evidently attacking one of Biden's nominees. I'm looking at this Hampton Dillinger guy, who evidently Kennedy wasn't fond of, is this an actual question? Do you believe in God, boy? Really? This is your biggest concern?
That happened. I mean, it sort of was couched in this conversation about whether or not he's pro-choice or anti-choice, because Kennedy is rabidly anti-choice.
Right.
What's funny about it, though, is this comes after there was a rage fest from the Republican Party in whenever they were trying to get Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. And you remember there was a lot of weird, sketchy things about like the church that she was involved in, and like it was a little culty, you know, and people were like, oh no, you're just like trashing to Catholicism. And it's like, well, she's a little bit of, you know, kind of a weird kind of Catholic. And so all these Republicans were like, how dare you question her faith? How dare you ask her about her church? This is all about religious freedom and blah, blah, blah. And then now Kennedy's up there being like, do you believe in God? Like, go away. Just stop. Why are you even there? Nobody wants to hear what you have to say.
It's really just incredible. But, you know, more importantly, I finally found out, and this is one of those things. I was a big fan of Michelle Bachmann's. She was crazy hot and crazy, which, you know, a perfect combination. And then she went away. She just decided she's going to leave. And I thought she was going to go back to Minnesota and do her thing. Evidently now she's running some group, but she was interviewed by one of these crazy religious groups about January 6th. And it was her opinion that that January 6th was like a family reunion. Everyone was happy. It was the happiest day of her life. That the 5th and 6th, they were just praying. They had a worship band. It was fabulous. It was great. There was no insurrection. There were just good God-fearing Christians who wanted, because God wanted the vote to be right. And that's why what it was. It wasn't an insurrection. There weren't terrorists. They're good God-fearing people.
There was that magazine, I think it was like Time Magazine or Newsweek or something, that she was on the cover of. And this is back way long time ago when she ran for president, like maybe in 2008 or something like that. And I remember that photo just being like crazy eyes Bachmann.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so weird. And every time I think of her now, that's what I think of, is just like the physical manifestation of crazy eyes. Maybe she has the kind of family that wants to just tear stuff down and tear things up and destroy a building. And, our family reunions are really just about food and fun. And there's a big cornhole tournament, that people take very seriously in the family. Maybe Michelle Bachmann just has a family that goes to a Walmart and starts looting. I don't know. She seems like the type.
Yeah, I mean, I'd wondered where she went, and now I know where she is. She's out, you know, crazier than ever. But the thing is I always thought she was like a kind of fun crazy, you know, kind of like, you know, not let's, hey, let's.
She was the kind of crazy where everybody knew she was crazy.
Yeah.
The Republican Party actually felt like she was nuts and sort of acknowledged it and didn't really take her seriously. And what's scary now is that they actually do treat the crazy people like they're legitimate. And what world? Like, Mitch McConnell doesn't think that. How is it that McCarthy is,
Well,
John
McCarthy's
Boehner,
a moron. Everybody I've talked to who's served in Congress, my friend Bob Ney, Joe Walsh, the Tea Party guy, Nancy Pelosi, they all agree he's a moron.
Yeah.
That's how it happens. When your leadership is run by morons, when the kid who had the dunce cap on every day is your leader, you have problems.
What my favorite part of this is that he honestly thinks that he is going to be speaker.
No.
And I can't imagine how that's going to happen.
Never.
There's got to be some crazy gerrymandering that would have to happen to make that happen. But I mean, that's reason enough You would think Republicans and Democrats would agree on that.
No, because
like the worst possible person.
McCarthy can't be speaker because Donald Trump's going to be speaker. The Republicans are going to take the House. They're going to take the Senate. They're going to immediately make Donald Trump the Speaker of the House. Then they're going to impeach Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and they're going to reinstall Donald Trump as president. They've already got it. Yeah. It's already gamed out. They've already got it. It's written down. This is their plan for 2022.
Boy, they better hope that actually happens. I don't see any other way that's going to work. But who am I? What do I know?
Now, the weird thing is Trump's, some are fearing that Trump's prowess, his word, his endorsement is losing a little bit of steam. Because you look in Texas, where the GOP candidate, this Susan Wright, lost to, I guess, another Republican. But I loved her comment that she knew she was in trouble when people were showing up wearing masks.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness. I didn't see that quote, but that's a funny one. She is a terrible candidate. Everybody on the ground there was talking about how there was no way that she was ever going to win. Donald Trump, when he went in there, all he did was endorse her. He didn't drop any money. He didn't do anything for her. But now that she has lost and sort of tarnished his name, now in the Ohio 15th, that special election, the primary is about to happen Tuesday. And the final election, the general election there, is the November 2nd. So now Trump is like, oh, crap, because there are all these stories about how people are thinking, oh, maybe Trump isn't that powerful anymore. Maybe people don't honestly believe that much in him. And it's like, did you not see the last election? You know, were you not there? And so I think this is one of those things where he's trying really, really hard to remain relevant, and he dumped something like $350,000 into an independent expenditure for the primary. He's done a robocall. He did that rally in Columbus where he invited the guy up on stage. And what's funny is this isn't like some, you know, like police officer, firefighter, or you know, virtue signaling, whatever Republican. This guy's a lobbyist. Like, really? That's who you're putting your money behind, is the lobbyist?
Yep.
Okay. That's like the worst thing that you can ever call somebody in politics. But I mean, that's kind of how Trump was for most of his presidency. There was a really big revolving door from Trump bringing people into the White House and people leaving the White House to try and make money on J Street.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, he's in Texas, at least he's trying to blame the Club for Growth. He didn't really want to endorse. He just took their word for it. He didn't do his research so much. It's the Club for Growth's fault that she lost.
Oh, I'm sure. Whatever. that makes no sense. What is surprising to me is that the Club for Growth would even play in that primary. That seems like a seat that's probably going to go Republican. And to be fair, the guy who ran against Wright is not that much far off from her. He's pretty crazy too. But, you know, it's somebody who's actually served in government and knows how to spell government. So maybe that's what it is.
So I understand the former guy has a helicopter for sale. Another one?
Yes.
We liquidating?
You know, I wondered that. So the day after the election in November, he put up his 1997 fancy luxury helicopter with 6 seats and soundproof system and all this crap. He put it up for sale for, and I swear to you, it said on the ad, best offer. It's like, are you really that desperate? And what's funny is this time, it's a 1990 copter, so this thing is like 30 years old. It's almost as old as me. and he's trying to sell it for $1 million. I think probably like that's what folks say that it's worth. But again, best offer. And so you kind of have to wonder, like, is he hurting for money? Is that what this is about?
I can't imagine that he is, because didn't he raise $75,000 from the minions to stop the steal and hasn't spent a buck?
Yeah, a whole, not 75 grand, 75 million.
That's right, 75 million, duh.
And it was all on this idea of Stop the Steal, and he hasn't had a single election lawsuit ever since then. I don't know the degree to which he can use that money for legal services. I think that there are some rules about that. But I would not be surprised if he was paying himself a very large salary, paying his kids a very large salary, doing some reimbursements to Trump org. You know, the thing about a PAC is that a lot of that stuff has to be reported to the SEC. So I hope that they understand that. But yeah, so I think he's liquidating. I think he's trying to sell some stuff off. He had three helicopters. He's got one left after he sells this one. So I guess we'll find out what else he's going to try and pawn off. He had a bad year last year, to be fair. I mean, like, he was having a rough time for the last several years at some of his properties, because his base does not stay at his properties. They don't buy condos in his building because they're too expensive. So, you know, all of this money that he lost through COVID, because the hospitality industry just got completely destroyed last year, you know, like, he's having a rough time.
Yeah.
And now he's got 11 billion lawsuits. So, ouch.
Exactly how much is 11 billion?
It's kind of like a nebulous thing, kind of like the color puke. You don't really know what it is. You just sort of throw it out there.
Or throw it up and out and down. Okay, yeah. I got it. I don't know where to go with that after that. So thanks for that one. But, you know, we find out this week after the testimony Tuesday of the Capitol Police and the Metro Police that we've got Mo Brooks wearing a bulletproof vest to the family reunion that Michelle Bachmann was at. Why is this a big deal?
So what was crazy to me is that he willingly admitted this with like a grin on his face. Like, he was divulging something where he was like, hey man, I got the inside scoop, if you know what I mean, right? And it was kind of like this thing where you're like, oh, you just revealed something that's going to get you in trouble. You're going to get subpoenaed for this information. Basically, he told a reporter that he was given a tip that it was going to be, you know, a risky, that there was, it was going to be some risky stuff. There were going to be some hijinks, and that he should, you know, do something to protect himself. So he wore some body armor. He said that's why he wore that big yellow coat, that right. Big yellow windbreaker over it. And I just think, like, this is one of those things where, you know, it's hard to say that this was a completely peaceful, fine tourist visit, family reunion, with people hugging and kissing whenever you feel the need to wear a bulletproof vest. But the question is, who told him that?
Steve Bannon,
when
obviously.
Did they tell him? Yeah, well, I wondered that. I wondered if it was Bannon or if he, you know, was coordinating with some of the militia guys. That's a big question. Who was taking folks around the Capitol and giving them the tours and giving them, you know, diagrams of what the Capitol looked like? Steve Bannon, ahead of the event, was basically sounding the alarm that this is going to be hell. This is going to be huge. The way that he described it, it was very, very clear that he knew exactly what was going to happen. And he knew it back in like December. So one of the other questions, though, is in Michael Bender's new book about the Trump administration, he has this weird section where Trump is in the big tent that they had, sort of the pre-tent, like their little green room outside of the stage for when they were going to go up to speak to the crowd in the ellipse. And you remember the video with Donald Trump Jr. that was filming, showing everybody what was in there, and
right.
Ivanka was in there and all of that stuff. At one point, Trump turns, and this isn't in the video, but at one point in the book, there's this amazing excerpt where Trump sort of asks his aides, do you think it's going to get violent? And Judd Deere, one of his comms guys, is like, no, of course not. Why would it get violent? Your people are never violent. Why? That makes no sense. Everybody's always really chill and fine and, you know, they're cool or whatever. So then Trump basically responded, I don't know. They're pretty fired up out there. And it was kind of this idea of Trump suspected that something was going to happen. And if Bannon knew, I mean, that's the thing. If Steve Bannon knew, he told Donald Trump. He might not work for the White House anymore, but I guarantee you he and Trump still talk.
Yeah.
And I bet Bannon had told him what to expect. And if Trump knew, the piece of his speech, this is in one of the other books, I can't remember if it was Michael Wolff, I think it was the Wolff book or the Bender book. They talked about how that speech that he gave was all about, basically was all completely written by his staff, but that one line where he said, we're going to walk to the Capitol and I'm going to go with you. All of that was ad-lib. His staff didn't write any of that. That was him. That right. was his choice to say that. So then you start thinking, okay, well, if he knew that this was going to get violent, if he knew that this was bad, and then he basically, you know, himself decided to provoke it, to stoke the fires, then that's a pretty big responsibility. And I would hope that the Capitol Select Committee is going to try and figure that out.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But do you buy the ham-handed kind of coup attempt that they were going to cause this chaos, the Secret Service was going to take Mike Pence, and they're going to put him in a secret location somewhere, and then just hold him there so that they couldn't certify the election? Do you buy that?
Well, I think what they tried to do, and this is to Pence's credit, is the story is that they took him down to the basement because he wanted to stay on the floor. He wanted to stay as close to the floor as possible. And finally, they got so close. I think it was like 40 paces from the door. The Secret Service was like, we got to go. And that's when they rushed him down the steps in that video. So they're underground in a an entrance that is seriously secure that only the president and the speaker and those folks can use. And his Secret Service were like, you need to get in the car. And he was like, hell no. If you put me in the car, you're driving me off. And I think that was what they intended to do, is they wanted to put him in the car, drive him to Andrews, and stick him on a plane. And at that point, they can't certify the election. And Pence was like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where I come back to, I get all of that, and you've got, the theory has me into that point, but there's tomorrow. You clear all that out, you bring him back, and you do it tomorrow. Whoever devised this plan didn't think about do it tomorrow. No, Did they plan on holding Pence indefinitely?
I don't know. I also wondered at what extent were they trying to create so much violence that Trump could declare martial law? Because if he could do that, then he stays in power. He could sort of try this indefinite, rule thing. I don't know that it necessarily would have worked. I think, that would have ended up in the Supreme Court really quickly, and the Supreme Court would have been like, yeah, no. Bye-bye.
Even his Supreme Court, I think, would have said, yeah, no. No, I'm yeah, right there
which
with
is,
you.
Which is funny, a lot of his books, the books that I've been reading, they talk about how much Kavanaugh really hates him.
Good. That's the best. Good. That's the only answer I got. Good. But I hope we get to the bottom of it. There's part of me goes, I hope someone was dumb enough to come up with this half-hearted, half-hammed kind of idea that, hey, this is how we could do it, because it's so stupid.
Well, here's my theory. All of the militia people, all of those top guys that were planning all of this ahead of time, the people who were getting the tours, they are going to need to do something to deal. They're going to have to give something up to get a lesser sentence. And the only thing that they're going to have is being able to rat on the congressman.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that happens. It does, you'll be here to keep us informed and up to date. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Keep up the great work there at Raw Story. Hope folks check out the work you do. As always, great stuff. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Again, make sure you check out her work over at rawstory.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.